You're listening to Around Comics, episode 254, brought to you by InStockTrades.com. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, if you are in the area, please drop by. Okay. And hey there, folks. Christopher Neitzman here. Let me get you introduced to this week's panel.
Yes.
First of all, returning from last week, our special guest from last week. So you're not anymore a special guest. You're an Around Comics regular. You're just a guest. Is the fantastically talented inker for Green Lantern these days, Mr. Christian Alame.
Thank you, Chris. It feels like it was just yesterday or even 5 minutes ago.
I know. Thank you for making the trip back in. Really appreciate
We've
it.
We've captured the loneliness from the last episode.
He's been here for 7 days.
Mr. Tom Caters.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey.
So, you know, we're back. We're off vacation. Did we miss a beat? Is it good?
No, it's better.
Is it better? Yeah, we needed the time off.
Yeah, we did.
This is good. I'm glad.
You guys were listening to a lot of bad episodes.
Is that, you know, it's a new day. But
whatever.
John Suntress was staying here every Friday.
I was like one of those for us. like a little homeless boy, like clawing at the window, like, yeah, you know, God bless us everyone.
You had your tiny Tim action set up.
It was actually just a roll from a paper towel dispenser, and yeah, it's just exactly.
March, is this the week? Are they coming back?
Mom, I'm a star.
Look at me. Now we're not broadcasting. Go home. Oh, man.
So, Mr. John Suntress, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I had to like talk to Bendis like for like 17 hours to make up for my not around comics.
Has he reached like a Howard Hughes level as far as talking to him? You do have to talk through a special filter so that he doesn't catch any of your bad vibes.
Wears the Kleenex boxes on his feet.
Don't leave any empty bottles around him.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Not cutting his fingernails.
Yeah, no, he looked very shaggy in Baltimore.
Bendis with like a long beard.
He's grown hair,
just like a long beard.
He is capable of growing hair. I know that.
He hit puberty.
Yeah, you know. No, it was good seeing him. I saw him in Baltimore.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
You were just out in Charm City.
I was. It was good. It was a good con. And
Charm's another word for venereal disease.
it is sad in Baltimore. You know, that's actually a fair. It's not quite Cleveland or Detroit, but it's not much better.
Yeah, it's not much better. Have you seen The Wire?
I was in Baltimore once. I saw seagulls like on the. That's all I remember. Don't ask. It's true.
Wow, man.
So you're there for an acid trip weekend in Baltimore.
No, just don't ask. Sorry.
Yeah, man.
Wow. All right. Well, before we get back to seagull talk, I need to remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. If you are a trade waiter, or if you just prefer to read some of your comics in collected format, then InStockTrades.com is the internet destination for you. You can find all of your trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, omnibus edition, absolute editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. prices. Those discounts range from 30 to 47% off the cover prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free. And you just heard our book club episode on JLA Avengers or Avengers JLA.
Nerd book.
Last week. Nerd. And we are all finished with that. But the new book club selection is Hellblazer Dangerous Habits by Garth Ennis and Bill Williams. Is that right?
Billy Williams, Billy Simpson. former right fielder for the Cubs or left fielder.
Williams.
Oh, hey, how you doing? 45. I enjoyed writing, drawing this book for Garth Ennis as we enjoyed Hellblazer.
Cool 45. Mm.
And that is available at instocktrades.com, so check that out.
He was at Wizard Chicago. I still call it Wizard Chicago.
Billy Williams?
It's the first time in my life I really saw somebody who was in Star Wars. That was old.
Did and you speak to him?
No, I just watched him. And then I said, Mark,
no, I love you.
Margot Kidder was there too. No, it took me such a long time to get to the bathroom. Half an hour from my table to like go to the bathroom, so I had no time to speak to anyone. However, like, I saw genuine stars.
Oh, absolutely!
You saw Lando Calrissian.
I went up to the green room to interview Mark Miller because we wanted to get off the floor. Because every time on the floor, you know, people were coming up, they wanted signed books and stuff. So we went go up to the green room. We figured, it looked like it was alone, and in the corner by himself, rubbing his temples, Billy D. Williams. And I'm like, hey, Mr. Williams, I apologize. I said I was going to do a video interview up here. Is that right? He's like, that's okay. I just had to get off the floor for a second. They're driving me crazy.
Lando needs a minute.
Exactly, man. And I'm like, all right, cool. And yeah, and really, Mark's like, look at that. Lando's here. Oh, this is great. Oh, I love it.
Guess what? He's not a traitor, okay?
No, he's a good man. Yeah, exactly. Man, we learned. Well, you know, I loved him from Bingo Long, the fine minor league baseball movie that he
Lando
did.
Lando kills.
Or actually, I guess it was Negro Leagues, technically.
What was the name good movie. His assistant who never spoke, the bald guy with the phone.
Oh, the guy who's like laughing. Yeah, exactly. That was very good, actually.
I don't know. I had the Star Wars figure, though.
I don't know, but the whole
that
time
was too
I thought,
close.
the whole time I would be like, what a shitty co-pilot. I cannot understand a fucking word this guy says.
I thought, it's because you're a kid. You don't see these movies. You saw these movies after the film, right?
Slightly ridiculous.
I saw Star Wars in 77.
Me too, man.
Yeah.
In the theater,
there
damn straight. You're goddamn right, man.
My parents saw it in the theater, and they said it seemed stupid.
Oh, man.
I was born in 78.
Yeah.
I feel old enough to be your dad.
Papa?
He said it with such disgust.
Papa.
I feel old enough to be your dad.
Old enough to be your dad.
That was good, man.
I mean, we have children in France when we are 10 years old. But still, it's a little young if even for me, okay?
Good, is he out of your canal? Good, put him to work.
Yes.
Grab that bucket. Start moving. That's
I'm
all right.
Sorry, guys.
It's cool.
Sorry, everyone.
No.
All right, music for this episode.
Yep. Oh, who have you got?
Sad?
It's my favorite band of all time.
Oh, so it's sad.
I decided that it was time.
Oh, God.
Was that the Novembers? Like,
no, 97?
Novemberists? Yeah.
Not the Decemberists.
It's my birthday in November, okay? Be nice.
When's your birthday?
17th of November.
Oh, that's cool. November 11th.
Which is also, since I'm half Greek, the name of the main terrorist organization in Greece.
I had no idea.
It's true. And one time, actually, oh, God, it's a good story.
The Alamey Army?
No. Listen to me for a second. First, when I used
to... No, actually, legitimate content is about to happen on your show for a change, man. Here we go.
Who the fuck do you think you are? Okay? That's enough.
Don't create an incident, man. Be a good ambassador. What's wrong with you?
Sip your whiskey in silence and just let us talk. So, when I used to go to Greece, like, every time the guys would look at my passport and see my birth date, and they would be, like, looking at me like I had something to do with it because it's my birth date. But beyond that, I'm living in New York years later. I'm married to my first wife, who was Greek.
Wow.
And one time she comes to me and she tells me they caught one of the, after September 11th, like a contribution between the US and European countries against terrorism and all that, like grew up and all that. They're like, they caught one of the guys for the first time in 30 years of November 17th. They caught him in the Piraeus Harbor in Athens. He was trying to blow something. He blew his own hands off. It turns out it's the cousin of, my wife's brother has a girlfriend, and that's the cousin of the girlfriend. Don't ask, okay? Just think about it. Anyway, my wife knew him. I never met the guy. She told me he was a really nice guy. She knew him for the years and all that. No, this guy's been caught as one of the main terrorists in Greece. The same week, I'm at home working. My wife is telling me, my ex-wife, we were separated at the time, but we were still talking. She was telling me, well, you know what? I think I'm being followed and all that. Sure enough, my cable goes off that week. I call the cable company. They're like, we send someone like immediately. I'm like, really?
Yeah, really.
That is suspicious.
A guy show up with a t-shirt tucked into jeans.
That guy, he comes to my place. He checks my pictures on the wall. Is that your ex-wife? You know, what do you do? Comics? Oh, that's cool and all that. Sounds like. And then he's like,
what kind of cable guy is this?
Do you want to check the TV? And it's like, he looks behind. He's like, oh, you should call him. I'm sure he's going to come back. I swear it's true. And the guy leaves. Okay, nice to meet you, man. And all that. I swear it's true. Wow. Just like they were checking everyone basically on that. I'm sure it was. Wow. I don't know who it was, but it was not the cable guy.
But it was your cable.
It came back like boom, 5 minutes after it was gone. I swear it's true.
You know what? That's the most effective cable fixing I've ever heard of. Because
that's the thing about the shadow government.
I should become loosely associated with the terrorist organization. I get my cable fixed?
That's the thing about
because you don't have to wait. Like we'll be there between 9 and 5.
Right. Oh no.
They show up at 9 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Shadow government cable, can I help you?
Whenever the cable company says that they will send someone over immediately, you know something is up.
I was interrogated for 48 hours, but that was the clearest cable picture I ever had.
Okay.
You don't understand. Under my genius appearances and good looks, I'm a pretty naive guy, okay?
Okay.
I know, I'm always the guy who gets it afterwards, you know? And after the guy was gone, I was like, wait a minute.
Wait, that's weird.
That's weird. Yeah, that's...
They didn't give me a cavity search the last time the cable guy came. I don't understand.
All right, Nisman, you can get
back to your bullshit.
Your crappy show back.
Back to your bullshit, Nisman.
Go on.
Your shitty American show.
La, la, la.
All right.
Is that a capitalistic show?
Yeah, you're capitalistic.
But you're ugly. Yeah,
your ugly American show.
Tom, what would my favorite band of all time be?
I'm thinking it's a fantasy band between Waylon Jennings and...
George Jones.
George Jones with a little bit of Tammy Wynette mixed in.
And some rock. You got to get some...
Oh, so it must be Marshall Tucker.
You're getting closer.
Okay.
Did the devil go down to Georgia?
Oh, no. I hope not.
No.
We're good. I don't want to be in the I don't want to be in the Woolly Swamp this weekend. Thank you.
It spawned two... equally awesome bands. They're from Belleville, Illinois.
Oh, it's Uncle Tupelo, right?
Thank you. Yes.
Is that the official version? Because I know Chris cries listening to Bonnie Tyler like every night, like on YouTube.
Total Eclipse of the Heart, absolutely.
Oh, no. All music for this episode from Uncle Tupelo.
The thing with Chris is it's surprising that anything could eclipse his giant heart.
Oh, that's nice.
That's very profound. Oh, I enjoyed that.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Now we have to sound like public radio. How about those sweaty balls?
All right.
Good times. Good times.
It has been well over a month, Terry Gross, since we have talked.
It is Pledge Week.
About comments. It is Pledge Week.
Thank God it did.
Jesus,
I was getting.
God, I hate Pledge Week.
I can't
on NPR.
Eat during Pledge Week. I can't work. It's like, what are you doing to me, guys?
But you got to, honestly, you do have to hand it for the local public radio stations because at least they do the online pledging and they literally do shave days off
of
the pledge.
If DC paid me better, I would pledge.
Oh, yeah. I understand.
Can you read that?
By Blackest Night. It has been literally
years since we talked about
comics. Tom.
Yes.
Start us off. What have you been reading, good sir?
One of my favorite books that's coming out right now that everyone should read because it's criminally underread is Rebels.
Yes.
From DC Comics.
Indeed.
Which is maybe one of the most fun and exciting comic books that are coming out right now.
And before you say anything else, I might add that Tony Bedard is one of the nicest guys.
You can
meet one of the most interesting, and he's good looking for those interested.
And ladies, he's good looking.
And ladies, he's a great guy.
It's awesome. And the art by Saint Aubin. What is the first name of?
Is it a foreigner?
It's Claude. It's Claude Saint Aubin. So
he's probably French.
Obviously, foreign.
Damn it.
If you're not reading Rebels, it is one of the most fun, self-contained things you could possibly read out there in the DC universe right now. It is, if you're enjoying Guardians of the Galaxy, which I am, from Marvel, you should be reading Rebels.
Oh God,
because
I remember those from the 70s. The only Guardians of the Galaxy, I remember the whole series from the 70s.
Yeah. It's fun because I think Tony kind of got screwed a little bit because he worked on Countdown and then he didn't get something in his own realm. And then he's got this cosmic thing going on. So now he has his own sort of corner that he's working with, and it's separate from Blackest Night, it's separate from everything else, and he's got to weave his own story with like Starro and everything, and it's been awesome through the first nine issues.
It's been so fun.
And you don't need to know the first trade's coming out, I think, next month. You don't need to know any of the characters going into it. I'm not the most familiar person with the 90s Legion.
Which started in the 80s, actually. Yeah, like 89, I want to say, or 85.
With the 90s version of the
L-E-G-I-O-N.
Yeah, the L-E-G-I-O-N. But reading this, it's great because you get all the aliens, you get everything going on, you have... it's like the craziest buddy movie type story going on where you have villains and heroes working together.
It is Han Solo sci-fi action.
Yeah.
It's like if Han Solo is super smart.
Yes.
Like Vril Dox is Brainiac 2. Like it's a super smart Han Solo who's just kind of a dick to everyone. But also there's like there's a hint of vulnerability to him, like lately, where there's like an element to him where he's not quite as impenetrable as you think he is. But you have all these other characters and the art has been fantastic.
It's and beautiful.
What Tony has done with Starro is amazing because he's put a twist on this legitimately sort of lame character.
Oh, it was like, a goofy early 60s,
you know. It's a goofy character, but what he's done is taken it and put a twist on it that doesn't erase anything previous, but adds a new layer to it where there's people
He Geoff Johns'd it.
Pretty much.
Like, he took an old character and added something to it and said, this is what Starro is now, and this is how everyone's going to react to it.
Yeah. Tony's a guy with also, like, not only is really nice, he's got, like, some strong experiences in his life. Like, he's been through, like, some shit, like, basically, not personally necessarily, but related to him and all that. And I find, like, he's one of these guys who manages, like, to stay very cool, like about the fright and all that, and just uses that stuff. And like, he makes his writing even more like.
Didn't he used to work on the animated stuff? Wasn't that where he came from?
He did for a while. I met Tony, actually. He reminded me, excuse me, I had forgotten that he used to be like an editor at DC, simply, you know, like, and he was the assistant. Oh, God, let me remember. He was the assistant of Pete Tomasi, actually. I worked with Pete like 4 years. Yeah. I've known Pete since started at DC.
Yeah, Pete's a great writer, too.
But Tony came when I was like away, actually, for the one time I was away, like for a while. And that's when Tony came in. But I know I had met him, and I spoke to him like a few months ago in Florida, where I mentioned.
Well, 10 years ago, Tony was working at CrossGen at the beginning of the decade.
I mean,
and actually, it doesn't surprise me that he does such a good job with Rebels because he was one of the writers of Negation and did a wonderful sci-fi book for CrossGen
Tony,
as well.
What he's doing with Rebel, it's so awesome because he's set up like the most... the pretense of why it's separate from everything is really kind of funny and silly. Like the fact that Brainiac 2 is like, we have to lock Starro into this world. But then now that he's locked him in, he gets to play with everything else in the DC universe because there's a whole world that the Green Lantern stuff isn't touching. And he's doing his own thing. And they mention it in the most recent issue. Is like Adam Strange shows up. It's all the cosmic characters.
The Omega Man
this
is there.
This book is so it's so criminally underread. Like if you enjoy a lot of people that maybe are reading like Power Girl or reading from like the Marvel stuff, the things that aren't tied into everything.
Yeah, under the radar stuff. Yeah.
The under the radar stuff. You should pick up Rebels because it's in the same vein. It doesn't tie into. Like, if you're intimidated by the fact that you think it ties into a bunch of stuff, don't be, because it's really, really awesome. It has put a twist on Starro.
Well, how often do you get, like, a self-sufficient title, something you can read, like, month after month, which is, in some ways, we all dream of that. Like, let's be honest. You know, like, I want to get that thing, like, every month and read it, and it's great, and I just enjoy it. Like, don't touch it. Don't mix it with everything
else.
You
know what it actually reminds me of? It actually, it's like a throwback to the 70s Legion of Superheroes in that there's a ton of characters in it, but it's not alienating in the sense. Like, they always introduce the characters. You always know what the characters are doing. And what he's done is he's sort of subverted the six-issue character. Arc. You know, like the six-issue arc. And he said, well, fuck it. We're just going to tell this big story with Starro.
It is what it is.
Yeah, and we're going to just tell this huge story with Starro. And yeah, there's six issues that work together, but it's a bigger story. So let's just keep going and let's keep going with it. And there was an annual with Starro. And they've twisted everything around. It's awesome. It's a really great
little
story.
Little self-promotion here. The only character I ever created for DC Comics is part of Legion with Dots, like our ESPCT. And that's not how it's spelled. Whatever.
I know what you mean.
Called Layla. So, Tony, if you hear me, please bring her back. I need money.
But if you're not reading Rebels, do. It is one of the best books I'm reading out there. It's fun. There's only 9 issues out plus the annual, so there's only 10 issues out. So if you get the trade, which is the first 6, and you get the next 4, it's fun.
The good news is they are going to tie into Blackest Night because DC does love the book and they want this book to succeed. So
behind it. As far as I know, and I don't know much usually, but I think they're behind it.
Yeah. I think it's got the taste of the.
And it's got every. It's great. I mean,
it is great. No, I agree with you, man.
It's
I like
got
it
the
too.
Taste of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Absolutely,
Marvel's been very. Very aggressive in promoting the Abbott and Lanning version of Guardians of the Galaxy and really giving it a push. And it's awesome because I would love to see the Bedard and Sade Abin version of Rebels get that same sort of foothold where they have their own little corner and he gets to tell his own little story without getting wrapped up in everything.
Yeah,
so.
If you like swashbuckling sci-fi...
It's amazing. Brainiac 2 is a dick to everyone, which is what everyone wants to see from a Brainiac.
And it picks up on some of the vibes that Starlin was doing with his space stuff with Comet, and also, but more importantly, he's cluing in, and especially now that they brought Adam Strange in, it has that feel of the Diggle Adam Strange miniseries where it did expose you to that corner of the galaxy.
It has a little bit more of an edge than the Starlin stuff did. It has a little bit more modern.
Well, that's Tony. Yeah. That's Tony. I mean, and taking nothing away from Jim Starlin, who I love reading his stuff. And it's
I like Tony's Brainiac too, because he gives him a real, like, a sharp edge to the character.
It's sharper than what Giffen had back when he introduced the character back in Legion. So, no, I like it a lot.
He has far more comics than I ever did. You know, that's just unbelievable.
We have a lot of spare time.
Exactly. Exactly. But no, I think that is a great book.
I got plenty of time.
It takes a lot less time to read them than it does to draw.
It takes me like 15 minutes to read it. And
you know what my hobby is? I build model kits, World War II airplanes, which takes even longer than drawing. So basically, I never get to build any plane and all that. I got them waiting. I get a few cockpit parts and all that.
What's your favorite World War II fighter?
P-51 Mustang, easy.
Nice.
P-51D. I'm actually online. Like, I'm one of the few guys who really knows about it. I even give advice to people who own one, how to restore the according to like World War II standards and all that. I got manuals from the 40s.
Damn.
And
that is absolutely fascinating. And,
I used to work for a company called Sanford. It's a Sanford Inc. company, and they create, you know, they make writing instruments. And one of the really nice lines of pens that they make is the Parker pens.
Yeah.
And they came out with an anniversary edition called the Parker 51, which was modeled after a P-51, the actual.
I'm going to tell you, when I was a kid, I tried to get. Nice. I love the idea of making model planes, but my biggest problem was I was the kid with the least amount of like
patience
for anything. Like
me
I was
too,
like,
when I was a kid, but then with a job, I think it's related to drawing. Actually, it's the same thing.
It's like
it takes
the counterbalance.
It takes like a. Except because I got so little time because of drawing, I wish I was retired. Quite honestly, without being 60, you know, like the whole thing. Like
so you could build, so you could just like, do model plans.
Retired,
I mean, I advise guys to make parts to correct model kits because all model kits have like. They get it wrong. They get the wrong radio on the cockpit,
because,
which pisses me off to no end.
Oh, son
because
of a bitch.
The thing. Because the same thing with you, if I could retire, I would, and all I would do is I would sit around and I would read all the old comics that I have piled up in my house. Like,
well,
that.
Somehow you make me want to not retire. Don't ask me. I get nothing personal.
You look at the sad. You just looked at the sadness. You
no, just I just had this flash of the two of us hanging on the porch, like, yeah. And I'm like, no.
He's reading comics. You're building planes.
You're looking. I'm huffing the fumes from your plane.
Difference between us is like a few years ago. I thought I was dying, and you just brought that back to me, and I was like, thank you. You make me want to leave.
Listen, no. A lot of the iTunes reviews for this podcast have said that we gather the feeling of dying. But we're all fits right in with everything. And so get everyone, hand them out.
Rise.
I lose my soul on the burning sand. Now I wanna be your dog. Now I wanna be your dog.
All right, my pick here, the one that has really I've enjoyed the most since we've been on vacation, and it actually surprised me because it went against two of my current comic book rules. I try not to buy $3.99 comics. If something's gonna be $3.99, I would rather pick it up in trade. Or buy $2.99 single issue. So this was a $3.99 comic. It's also an X-Men crossover. I haven't bought an X-Men crossover comic in about 15 years. But Jeff Parker doing X-Men versus Agents of Atlas was overpowered me. It was too much to resist. Are you guys clinking beers over there?
Yeah.
Kyle, can you fetch me a beer? Yes. You're a good man.
Christian and I, we get along good.
You have
I like
bonded.
Being on the same side of the time.
Christian, yeah. You may be invited back. I'm just warning you.
Maybe.
I'm just warning you.
I don't get along with everyone.
I don't really know if I want to.
Exactly. Exactly.
So X-Men versus Agents of Atlas.
Was it, Chris, I have to ask you. I did not pick this up. Was it good?
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
If you like Agents of Atlas, that's what this is. It has a little bit of the current X-Men continuity, which spoilers for those of you who are not up to current X-Men continuity, but they are no longer in San Francisco, apparently. They have relocated
Wait a minute. Last time I read the X-Men, I stopped reading the X-Men 1985.
Yeah, you're fucked.
A couple things happened since then.
Yeah. I picked up like a few things, like a few issues, like not so long ago, last year. They were in San Francisco building a whole like utopic like mutant world and all that. So what happened?
Apparently that didn't work out so well.
Where did they move to?
They fucked up again?
They now live on
Fresno.
No, close.
They live on Asteroid M in the middle of an ocean.
Isn't that supposed to be called Asteroid X now?
No. Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Well, they should throw a bottle of champagne on it and rename
it. Yeah, just rename it. Mutant Island.
That's basically what it is.
It's like Alcatraz. Yeah.
It's their new Genosha.
Okay. Yeah. But smaller.
Utopia?
Mutopia.
Mutopia. Whatever.
I don't even know. It is Utopia, I believe.
They're out of San Francisco. They're living on Asteroid M, which is now floating in the ocean. Apparently Namor is now an X-Men. Or an X-Man.
Well, he's a mutant.
Is
he? Yeah. He's never been.
So is he considered to be the first mutant?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he is Marvel's first mutant. I don't know.
You make fun of us for being a nerd, but you just broke out some Namor is the first mutant.
Look at the nerd hat on you, Christian.
I grew up like reading the X-Men, like, and I seriously have not read them in many years.
You remember it.
I know the basics, but I haven't read like most of the stuff in the 90s. Or early 2000s, I have read like the Morrison run,
yeah, mm-hmm.
And I have read like the what's the guy from Buffy,
Joss Whedon,
Joss Whedon,
which was great.
I thought it was excellent. Yeah. Actually, yeah. Should I say that? I was having coffee with Chris Claremont, and he told me, you know, we were talking about the X-Men, obviously, you know,
sure,
and all that. Yeah, just starting X-Men Forever, and he was like, Yeah, X-Men. What was the title?
Astonishing
X-Men. He's like, I like that. But he had like a little twink in his eye. I'm like, well, yeah, it was great. It was great. It was like...
It was your X-Men.
It was exactly what... And he's like, that's exactly my point. And like, I should have done it. You know, that's...
Yeah.
So...
It did. It recaptured Claremont's X-Men.
Absolutely.
So X-Men versus Agents of Atlas. You know, Agents of Atlas has been fantastic since Parker did the miniseries and then the ongoing series. And what has been awesome about that is that Marvel has really they've stuck a claim to their Golden Age characters and recaptured a lot of that, but they've done it in a way that it's inside the Marvel universe, and they've reintegrated guys like, you know, Gorilla Man. Is it Gorilla Man?
Yeah, but it's, I mean, these...
Or Congo Bill. No.
No, Bill, Gorilla. Bill, no, it's Gorilla Man.
But it's
Gorilla Man.
It's Gorilla Man. It's
the human robot. Yeah, the human robot. But the thing, all those characters were just one-shot characters. Yeah, with the exception of Venus, Marvel Boy, and Jimmy Woo. That's your core that was Atlas Comics. I mean, they were all real monthly characters. They all had their own books. You know, Yellow Claw and everything. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Hill Barter saying good night to everybody.
Elvis is leaving the building.
Bye, Bonds. Bye, War Bonds. Thank you, Hill.
We'll hook up with you later.
Take it all easy, right, man.
No, but that's what I love about Agents of Atlas is that it's been able to expand on the history of the Marvel Universe, and they exist in this little pocket where they're able to, you know, bump into the Avengers or bump into the X-Men or bump into...
It's filling in the gaps. I mean, it's filling in those pre-60s, you know, Marvel years.
Much like Rebels, is that, are they part of the DCU? Absolutely. Do you have to know everything that's going on in DC to read Rebels? No, it's the same thing with Agents of Atlas, is that you can read this book and it's fun. You don't have to know absolutely everything that's going on. Now, the X-Men versus Agents of Atlas, it's just two issues. It's a two-issue mini, and... I don't think that you have to really know what's going on with current X-Men continuity, but if you are an Agents of Atlas fan, you're really remiss if you don't read this. Now, the main story is great, but the real treat to this is the backup story, which goes back to the Silver Age X-Men, and I'm going to throw this over to Christian. Because this is...
Christian's gone. Kyle Bice.
Oh, my God. Christian, you changed. Okay, I'll hand this over to Kyle.
No, there's no one better at drawing Silver Age Cyclops than Chris Somnick.
Chris Somnick does the backup, which is an old Agents of Atlas, which is... You know, a super team that exists in the 1960s, and they've come back in present day. So here they are matched up with the Silver Age X-Men, the original team. And Chris Somnick doing the original X-Men team is sex on paper. It is beautiful.
No, it's so good. And much like when Gabe Hardman on the Agents of Atlas series would do his flashback scenes, it's great stuff. This is, I understand the idea what Marvel's doing. They, by putting the X-Men name and logo on the book, they are trying to entice a bigger audience for this excellent book. Because essentially, this is a continuation of the Agents of Atlas series. I'm sure it will be traded that way as well. In all positive ways. And this is great because Parker deserves the audience, the artists deserve the audience that are on this book as well, and these are great characters that, as you say, are adding to current continuity in Marvel, but also enriching the past, and Jeff has very, very easily been able to incorporate these characters. On the cover, you've got Gorilla Man and Wolverine, one of, in fact, I think it was the first issue of the regular series, featured a backup story where you had the first encounter of Wolverine and the agents back in the 50s in pre-Castro Cuba.
And Agents of Atlas does the best... recap pages, the previously in and the best introductions, and they definitely here's the intro for this. Did you know in 1958 Wolverine was on a secret mission in Cuba where he was apprehended by the agents of Atlas? In order to escape, he blew up Atlas team member M11, the human robot. Did you also know a few months ago Wolverine was on a mission in New York City where he again encountered the agents of Atlas? The reconstructed M11 recognized Wolverine's voice and melted off his arm. Did you also know Wolverine is a quick healer? and robots carry grudges.
That's and really, that is the only continuity moment.
It's awesome.
And it's there for you at the start, because it is. That is the one fact that does kind of enrich the story, because there is this ongoing mystery of how M11, which really, he's not an android. He doesn't have like a human mind. Well, I guess he did way back. But for all intents and purposes, nobody really knows what's going on in the mind of M11. And it was very interesting that at this very quiet moment when the Agents of Atlas were fighting the new Avengers, M11 took it upon himself to attack Wolverine. And for, and also for people who don't know, the Atlas Corporation is kind of a Hydra-like organization, a worldwide conglomerate that has its fingers in a lot of dirty pies.
Yeah.
Jimmy Woo, who was an FBI and SHIELD agent.
It's like it's like the Asian Hydra.
Yes. Yeah, that's great. And Jimmy Woo has been given this organization to lead, much like Daredevil leading the Hand. Yeah. And is using it for good, but under the guise of it still being an evil organization.
Well, what I love about Agents of Atlas, just like Rebels, is that it deals with these awesome, like, 1960s, like, hipster spy vibe to it. And so there's like world domination and
capers, lots of capers, you know, lots of little plans.
But there's like this wink and a nod fun to it.
Well, there's a talking gorilla. There's a mermaid.
Well, yeah, there's
Namor is in it. I mean, it's a great combination of characters. You guys had Don Glut on, and Don is the guy who put together this original team back in that What If issue. And Jeff has, as you said, Chris, from the first miniseries on, has run with these characters, made them his own, and only adds to their interest level. And also, he's been telling great stories with these characters. They're great. It's really fun. If you haven't started reading Agents of Atlas, this X-Men crossover is a good place to start.
Yeah.
You're going to like it.
Parker does a fantastic job of building tension and drama, but always having this little wink.
There's always humor, yeah.
There's always this nice little undercurrent of that he doesn't forget that this is entertainment value, and Jeff does a fantastic job with Agents of Atlas, and it's also been a showcase for some pretty fantastic art.
Yeah, he always has amazing people working on what, like I said, Gabe Hartman, now Somni in the backup, and I always forget the Spaniard that does it normally.
Oh, you're gonna
Guerrillo. No.
Yeah,
no, that's I'm, not. Yeah,
yeah. I'm
sorry,
I'm
man.
Not exactly.
All right, Parker. And Parker actually in Baltimore gave me the hardcover of the Dark Reign arc, the second hardcover.
Oh, nice.
Which was
very nice.
So,
all right, let's go.
All right, John.
Oh, I'm gonna steal from your pile. I'm sorry to
all
say,
right,
pal, because I've already heard you talking about this book on 11 o'clock comics.
Oh.
Nice.
Kyle also has thoughts.
No, but he called my name first, so I'm sorry.
It's a cross table high five.
But no, obviously we always jump in, and so I want to hear what you think of it too.
Well, you've actually talked to Rick, so
Rick.
Cross table.
When in New Avengers, Doctor Strange lost the title of Sorcerer Supreme and the Eye of Imago, or whatever the hell his name is.
Amagato.
Thank you. Yes, indeed. Went to the least likely magic member of the Marvel Universe, Brother Voodoo, and is now Dr. Voodoo, which I like to say in my Stan Lee voice. But now you've got Dr. Voodoo, Avenger of the Supernatural. It's an incredible book. The first issue came out. Rick made a big publicity push on this, has talked to everybody about it, and I am happy to say that the book matches the hype. It is excellent.
The art is awesome. The story. Here's the thing I love about it, though. What I love most about that book is that you can see where it can grow.
Completely.
It's not like one of those first issues that you read sometimes where you're like, where is this going to go from here? And then it doesn't get better than that. You can see where things are going to go, and it was still really good.
Yeah, right? I thought there was a really great first chapter that can stand on its own as well. I mean, and there's some heavy hitters. I heard Vince on 11 o'clock comics talk about this, and he actually, I think, spoiled a lot of things. I will refrain from doing so, but I will point out that
Rick spoiled it to us.
Well, he did. There's some heavy hitting bad guys that use magic in the Marvel Universe that try to test the mettle of Dr. Voodoo at this point.
You know what?
And that's fair.
This has been out for a month since.
You want me to throw it out there?
You know what?
All right, fine.
He punks Dormammu and Doctor Doom.
And Doctor Doom.
In the first issue.
Yeah. No, it's I think Bendis had a good setup for it in New Avengers. I think Rick is following through. Rick is very excited about this. And the other interesting thing that Rick has made very clear is that Dr. Voodoo's magic comes from a different place than Dr. Strange's magic. Mm-hmm. So it incorporates a lot of the great stuff that I read back in the Strange Tale days.
He's more of like a kick you in the groin type guy than Dr. Strange, who's more of like a...
Well, it's, yeah, and it's also that kind of earthy base that, yeah, that voodoo comes from, as opposed to the Sorcerer Supreme. Yeah.
Hello.
And,
there's a little bit more blood and chicken feet.
Oh, yeah. This. And yeah, that's cool. And, you know, I actually, in anticipation of this, I bought that second Marvel Essential, mm-hmm, of the black and white stuff that has a lot of the Doctor, yeah, Brother Voodoo Strange Tales. And it's great because...
To me, the strongest part... it was the art.
The art's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I think with the art, one of the best things that I've noticed just today looking at it again is the coloring.
Oh, yeah.
Is this Scotty's colorist on Wizard of Oz? It looks like the same guy.
I don't know.
Jean-Francois Beaulieu? Boy,
it's nice, sure, though. It's nice.
Where's Christian when you need him to pronounce a name? yeah, I mean, you can see the coloring is gorgeous. It's really shows through. I mean, and the art is awesome, obviously, but the color just really complements everything and really makes it stand off.
Was this the same guy that did the Secret Invasion Black Panther story arc?
The colorist? I'm not sure.
No, the artist.
Oh.
The guy who penciled it. What's the name of the pencil?
That surprised me.
Yeah, I don't know, actually.
What's the name of them? Yeah, it is the same guy.
Yeah, Christian, come give us a proper pronunciation.
How do you pronounce the colorist's name? Jean Beaulieu.
Monsieur Jean-François Beaulieu.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jesus. All right.
Thank you for 20. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
The next subject is world continents.
Yeah, to join up. I loved
the first issue.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of funny because to me, there was like certain imperfections in it that I actually liked that I think lent itself to me wanting to read the rest of them. There was like, to me, the I didn't quite know who Jericho Drum was at the end. I feel like maybe putting the handbook entry at the end. I don't like the handbook entries at the end. I always feel like it's kind of a cop out.
Well, but what I did
feel like it's a little bit of a cop out, but I think Remendering did a good job of giving you enough. Well, to get by, but
did you like? But I liked the Tony Isabella essay that I also had read back in the day,
I think,
in the old black and whites.
I think that's
Tales of the Zombie. That's where that
came
from.
Okay, but that plus the handbook entry is not worth an extra dollar.
Don't use it. Well, the second issue is going to be $2.99.
No, yeah, and I'm not saying I'm not. It's not like don't read the rest of the book. I think that it was.
Yeah, I'll disagree. I'll say read it.
Get this. I love the first issue.
I understand, I'm saying like the filler stuff I think is good too. But go ahead.
Yeah,
just too much like filler for you.
Well, to me, like the handbook entry, I'm never gonna. If I've read the whole issue, and I wasn't interested in the character, there's. I loved the first issue, and I didn't even read the handbook entry. I was just like, whatever.
But for
like,
the people, but honestly, there are people that are going to pick this up and say, "Who is this guy? Where did he come from?" And everything.
Yeah,
and then that's where I think it is.
In the same in the same realm, how much of that handbook has anything to do with this story?
Well, again, and I didn't focus on the handbook. I focused on Isabella's article.
I'm now being super picky.
I understand. I'm just saying though that my look at the filler stuff was, I'm really enjoying reading this Tony Isabella thing. And then there was the Ohatmu, and I didn't care
don't
about
read,
the Ohatmu.
Yeah, don't read the handbook. Thing.
Yeah,
I don't,
that's fine.
Tony's awesome, cool. Man.
That's John called me up in the middle of the night several weeks ago, and he goes, "So Chris, I'm reading the Ohatmu entry on Brother Voodoo. Have you read this yet?"
Yeah. Because I heard on 11 o'clock comics that Vince is talking about Ohatmu and everything.
No,
I'm like,
Vince
called it to his attention. Yeah. Have you gotten the latest Ohatmu? And it's like, oh, yeah, I got it. And I'm like, is this manga? What the fuck is this?
The thing with Ohatmu.
I had no idea what the fuck that was.
The who's who?
That is the official handbook of the Marvel Universe. Ohatmu.
And I just like, I loved hearing Ohatmu. Thank you, Christian.
As we say in France.
Is that a big buzzword?
I'm not saying those entries aren't like, but to be honest, like,
well, I'm not role playing with the Marvel Universe. I don't need to know who could kick the Hulk's ass.
And
you
that's
know,
a little bit of the exactly. That's a little bit of the touch where I was like.
Why Tony's piece I thought was cool. Tony Isabella's piece about it.
It was a nice but I loved it. I loved the first issue.
And it's beyond all the medicals, or I should say beyond all the magic, we've got a very interesting real life world for Jericho Drum as well. Being in New Orleans, he's a doctor at a free clinic, and I think this is going to be very cool, and I am really fingers crossed on this, because I think Remender's the right guy to make this happen.
I think it's a series that he'll grow into.
This could be like, I mean, and again, I think Fraction benefit. Well, when Fraction was on the Punisher, he certainly made his run, you know, his own when he was writing it by himself, and then Rick came on to co-write. I think this could be another like Iron Fist in the way that Brubaker and Fraction were able to.
Run. You get your run on it.
I think it's a cool character. It's enough of a blank slate that, you know, you put it in the right hands, they can fill in the details and really
Iron
make a great
Fist,
character.
By the way.
It's coming back. Don't worry. It's coming back. Once they get past all this shit, don't kid yourself. They know how well things went.
As somebody who doesn't know Dr. Voodoo, did you guys know who he was before?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, we did a good job with
that. That's my only criticism, is that I was sort of confused what his powers actually were.
Right.
Like, at the end of it, like, they hinted at the invulnerability to fire. But then I was kind of like, who's the other? Like, it wasn't bad in the sense that, like, I got to the end and it was like, I don't want to read the rest of it. But I kind of feel I'm a very forgiving reader. Like, if something interests me, if I get
and
a
you're
touch.
Very, and you are a very caring lover.
Yeah, I'm a caring lover. I'm interested. Like, if I get, like, a touch of something I'm interested in, I'm like, oh, I can live
he's
with it.
He's kind of hot. I have to meet Christian, myself.
In kind of a woodsy sort of way.
We sat on the kind of woodsy table. But if I get a touch of something I'm interested in, like, I'm pretty...
exactly.
I'm pretty forgiving. But I could see a lot of people reading that first issue who are, like, the more, like, literal readers.
But what does he do?
Yeah, like, the more literal readers might be a little, like, I don't understand... What is he? What is that? You know, like, it's a little...
You know what? You know what?
It's
a magic book.
Yeah.
You know what
he
can do? Whatever the fuck he wants to.
Well, and he's learning himself. I mean, that's the other thing is that much like Doctor Strange at the start, we've got a new Sorcerer Supreme who's really kind of finding his power level.
And I think that's the great thing about this book is I think there's a lot of room to grow into it. Because I don't think the first issue was the perfect first issue. I think it was a really great first issue that got me interested. But I can see where they're going to go in new places with it. And I'm excited because I love Remender's writing. So. Yeah.
A recent story arc that involved Brother Voodoo was the Black Panther in Reggie Hudlin's run when right before he married Storm, they had the bachelor party.
Okay.
And Brother Doodoo. Brother Doodoo. That would be not Brand Eck, their version
that
of
was
it.
The
Brother
other
Doodoo.
Thing that threw me off a little bit is I didn't quite know how he ended up being Sorcerer Supreme if I wasn't reading the Avengers.
All explained in New Avengers.
That threw me just a little bit. Okay. Not too bad. Like, I picked up what wasn't going on, but I did get a little bit of the sense of being dropped in, like, a little into the middle, and I was kind of like, oh.
And for me,
and I picked it up, and it was fine. Okay. I was fine. Yeah. It was fine.
See, but, and I honestly, that was a cool story. I mean, it started with Stephen Strange kind of going around the Marvel Universe saying, all right, it's not me anymore. Who's the next guy?
Did they have a recap page at the beginning of it? Maybe I just skipped the recap page.
No, they didn't have a recap page. Like, 3 or 4 pages in. That first scene with Stephen Strange, they sort of say what happened.
Yeah, and
maybe
there's...
That's an odd thing because one of the things I actually give a lot of credit to
you should have like a siren or something like that you should play whenever there's a girl in the story.
I give a lot of credit to the Marvel books for is the recap page because actually it's sort of helpful.
Yes.
And I wasn't complete. I mean, I'm not saying that I was completely lost by it, but I felt a little like, oh, like how did he end up being Sorcerer Strange?
And I like the fact that it really was told in the story as opposed to the recap page. And again, maybe because I read the story and I was already aware of it.
Oh, okay.
That was fine.
It was in the Ohatmu.
Way to go, fuck.
motherfucker. That is why the Ohadmu is not something to be trifled with.
No, but you should pick it up. Fucker. It's awesome. It's awesome. The art's great. The writing's great.
It is. It's a very cool book. And also, it only makes me more excited not only to continue to read Brother Voodoo, Dr. Voodoo. I keep calling him Brother Voodoo because I'm an old man.
He is Brother. Yeah, but, and he will be Brother Voodoo again because Dr. Strange will come back.
The good thing is I'm really looking forward to Wade's miniseries. And to be honest, I kind of would welcome Stephen Strange just being another magic guy, and he can just be Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange does not have to be the Thor Thru Supreme. Yes. I'm sorry he doesn't.
Yes, he
does. No, I'm sorry he doesn't. Yes, We've had 40 fucking Listen, years of that. It's time for something
to
new.
Marcus Martin.
I think this is going to lead up to another Sorcerer Supreme. Well, not a Doctor Strange book, not a Sorcerer Supreme.
Here's the thing.
I think both characters are strong enough to handle it.
I still go back and I read the Brian K. Vaughan, Marcos Martin.
Yes, awesome. The Cure. Fantastic. I loved it. Great.
Good miniseries.
Very Ditko-esque. It was awesome.
It's awesome.
I was only half joking, but Stephen Strange will be Sorcerer Supreme.
I hope not. I kind of hope not. I really don't. I'm sorry. I think he's a strong enough character.
But I hope that Steve Rogers stays dead.
Okay, fine. I don't think. I'm just saying. I think even when Stephen was
same argument. Same argument.
No, I would disagree because I
what
think.
What do you mean you disagree?
Because I think Stephen let me finish and then okay. you can rebut if you'd like. But I think in the early issues of Strange Tales, the character was learning his magic.
Yeah.
And I think that now it would be interesting to see this same character learning to deal with the fact that he doesn't have his magic as much as he used to have it and still be able to conjure the few things that he's able to do.
Same thing with Captain America. That a man at a time. It's after 40 years of Marvel continuity, Steve Rogers, he was no longer a man at a time.
Sure.
Where Bucky is now. And I think that's a core component of the character, in my opinion.
Wanna take the long cut, we'll get there eventually.
Let's talk about my next book.
All right, you go.
This is a book that has been criminally under-talked.
No one's talking about
under-talked.
Sir Edward Grey, Witchfinder, the BPRD Hellboy spinoff.
Yes.
Which, written by Mike Mignola.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. Art by Ben Steinbeck.
Also easy for you to say.
Letters by Clem Robbins. And colors by Dave Stewart. It's different from both Hellboy and BPRD in that it is a time, sort of like a period piece. A period piece not...
Much
merely
like the Lobster Johnson stories.
But not merely in the sense of the time it's taking place in, but the storytelling is a much more straightforward, more caption-heavy sense than Mignola has used before in doing his other stories. And I've been loving it. It's a great story about Sir Edward Grey, who back in Victorian England was hunting down witches. And all of a sudden, this demon shows up.
He's kind of like a Professor Challenger, Conan Doyle kind of
like
character.
A little bit of that.
Lost World.
Compared to Hellboy and BPRD, it is way more straightforward storytelling, which fits the story, actually the time period of the story and the art of the story. And it's been a tremendous amount of fun. And if you are reading Hellboy and BPRD, you should be reading Sir Edward Grey, Witchfinder.
I've picked it up. I read the first one, and I decided I was going to get the rest of the series in single issues since I had already started, and then I'm going to read the rest of it. But, yeah, it looks gorgeous. It's fantastic Mignola covers. You know
Mignola. I've had a few beers.
Mignola, isn't it?
Mignola.
I thought it was Mignola.
Mignola.
Fucking
Mignola.
Whatever.
Mignola. Mignola.
He's a nice guy.
Mignola. 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 Mignola.
It's
Mignola.
It's
what are you saying?
I'm trying to just get Mignola.
All right.
Okay. Sure, my next one. Staying on
Mignola.
On
Mignola.
Kind of the horror. The horror.
The horror.
And I had mentioned this a little bit on 11 o'clock comics earlier this week, and told people I would be talking about it on
a teaser.
It was a teaser.
So what, like 25 listeners came over?
Probably.
From that weird little show that you do on the side.
Yeah, 20 from the little, from the side project. This is the Zombie Survival Guide, Recorded Attacks by Max Brooks, who is, I believe, the son of Mel Brooks.
He is the son of Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
He came out of Mel Brooks' head.
Oh, look at this. Anne Bancroft and I had a kid. Like we named him Max. That was it. We're done.
No, he came out of his thigh. Like the thigh of Zeus.
Oh, very nice.
Story.
Very, as a Greek, you should know your mythology. Well, attaboy.
There you go.
Oh, God, it's going to be Greek. Except,
and we'll be talking about coffee shops later on, too.
I thought DC Comics had like a copyright on zombies. Or like a trademark.
Oh,
like
no,
something.
That was
Marvel beat him.
That was
before
Image,
that,
before, Image before DC.
That's true, and too. Yeah, Walking Dead was before it all.
I have never seen or heard of a zombie before Blackest Night.
Okay. Oh, that's his story, and he's sticking to it.
I do not understand what you're saying.
If it does not have a black ring, he's not
so
interested.
Maybe you think your capitalistic way can shit history out, but...
I don't.
Gonna work,
I don't
okay?
know what you're talking about when you're talking about zombie vibe. I
Jeff
do not know.
Johns invented zombies. Thank you very much.
I was not scared in the 70s when I watched those movies.
So this is the Zombie Survival Guide, Recorded Attacks by Max Brooks, who's also the author of the Zombie Survival Guide, which is one of my favorite books of all time because it is an amazingly awesome deadpan serious guide to surviving the zombie
What about
apocalypse.
World War Z?
Is an equally awesome novel about it's the record of the zombie apocalypse.
You make me want to read it.
It is so good. So this is from Three Rivers Press. Now the art
is that in Pittsburgh?
I'm guessing, yeah. Allegheny sounding type of thing.
It gets confusing because the
a gum band on that.
The art is provided by Avatar Press here in Rantoul, Illinois. Avatar was involved in this.
Avatar was some kind of like a Brazilian cult or of some.
No, they're in Rantoul, not Brazil.
Rantoul. It's still a cult.
But itself,
it,
no.
It is
same
it,
thing.
If
same
you thing. if you have read Zombie Survival Guide or World War Z, you know that Max Brooks approaches this in a very realistic. This is how it happened. This is how you kill zombies. This is what it is like, and it is done in an absolutely serious 100% straightforward approach. And so these are recorded attacks by zombies from prehistory to 1992. And you have like French Foreign Legion protecting forts against zombie hordes, which is an awesome story. You have early attacks in America. You have attacks in prehistoric Africa.
Are they slow zombie or fast zombies?
They're slow zombies.
Slow zombies.
Yeah, these are slow zombies. And it is absolutely perfect in what it does. My only criticism on the book is that the stories are sometimes too short. It is because it's almost done in a documentary style. This is the day. This is what happened, and this is what we know about it. And so,
it's like a chronicles.
Yeah, it's very much a chronicles approach to it. And sometimes the stories can be as short as 4 or 5 pages, and sometimes as long as 12 or 15. I think.
Wait a
and
minute. Does he draw as well?
No, he did not draw it. The
I see his name. I don't see the artist's name, and the art is quite nice.
The art is beautiful. Have you picked this up yet, Tom?
No, I haven't.
It's
you know, we had copies of it at our radio station.
Brian.
I was stunned.
I see.
Really? And it's it. Yes, and I grabbed one and I haven't had a chance to read it. I remember last year at the Windy City Con, we had the preview.
We had previews from Avatar Press.
Yeah.
Now, it retails for $17 and it is a very quick read. It's probably I think 130, 140 pages maybe.
Some nice art.
But it's beautiful art. Beautiful art.
It does look beautiful. And I'm trying to find the artist's name.
Here,
I see a signature on the cover that says Ibrahim.
It is. You guys talk amongst yourselves.
Oh, hey.
I think, how you doing?
What do you think the odds are that the artist is actually credited in the book? I think
it sounds like a great book, a very interesting project, but I wish the artist was on the cover.
Actually, I just spoke to Robert Kirkman recently, and we were talking about Max's zombie stuff in general. And I was just curious if Robert has read any of Max's stuff. And he said he started reading the Zombie Survival Guide, and he had to stop because... just because he read something, and he's like, "Oh shit, I should have put that in Walking Dead," and he literally dropped the book. He's like, "Okay, I can't read it."
Yeah.
He's like, "Yeah." He's like, 10 years from now, I really look forward to reading all of Max's stuff.
After 28 days later, he was a little spooked out.
That's what I was talking about when I was referring to fast zombies.
Let me look. He said, actually,
movies don't bother him, and TV zombies don't bother him, but to read books or comics that are zombies, he stays away.
I don't know about you, I never liked vampires. They bore me. Dead mummies and all that. I always liked zombies since I was a kid.
Really?
There was this film I used to love, like early 80s. I'm talking 81, 82.
Okay.
In French, it was called just Zombie. And it was in a supermarket in the US, like in a shopping mall that was closed and all the zombies were coming in and all that. Oh. I thought it was terrifying. I don't know what the name of it is in English, like in the States. It was just called Zombie.
I wonder if it was in a shopping mall?
I wonder if that was Dawn of the Dead.
No, it was one of the Romeros.
Okay.
The illustrations in this book are by Abram Robertson for Avatar Press, written in tiny letters.
That poor guy.
Well, that's a shame. That should be different. I mean, it's nice to be Mel Brooks' son, and to be a
good writer.
Yeah. Why didn't they just say recorded the Zombie Survival Guide recorded attacks by Mel Brooks' son?
Honestly, Max is—he's a good writer. Max can write.
You can do a lot of things. You can be a dream space. You can be like lots of things. But
look at the fucking credit for the guy who drew this.
Yeah, no,
like
in
tiny fucking like.
Wow, Alan Combs is like very proud of his Sean Hannity credit that he had for years compared to that.
Excellent
That's very good.
But with a lack of like.
Well, Max had nothing. Yeah, I don't think Max had it. I want my name this big, and I want the guys this tall.
I have nothing against Max. I'm just saying, Jesus Christ.
A little Banana Republic.
No, you're right. It's a graphic novel. It's a graphic novel.
There's not even words on this page.
It's not an illustrated It's not an illustrated novel. It's a comic book.
It's a Jewish conspiracy, I tell you guys.
Yeah, I'm sure.
There's no words on this page.
No.
There's two
I wrote that. I wrote
that. That page, by the way. If you want to see badass ninjas hacking up zombies, this is your book. There's an awesome ninja versus zombie story.
Motherfucker.
I'm going to go on with a Jewish angle because like Chris and I were talking about that. Like
I'm married to a Jewish
girl. Jews had nothing to do with comics. It just came afterward. It's not like Kirby, Siegel, Schuster.
Nothing. Innocent bystanders.
Who do they think they are?
My wife is Jewish, and that's the only thing she's interested in comics.
Well, my ex-wife was Greek. I'll exchange anytime you want.
Yeah. Abram Robertson.
I'm not with her anymore.
Abram Robertson drew this, but good luck finding out unless you look for it for about 25 minutes.
That's crazy.
It's okay. It sounds like a great book. I really want to read it, honestly. But,
would you like to borrow it?
Just take.
That's his door price from coming in.
That's the credit.
Mr.
John.
You sure?
What do you have right there, holding in your hands, son of a bitch?
I actually had the opportunity this past weekend to congratulate Pete Tonmasi on the great job he's doing on Blackest Night Batman. For me, not only has this added to the Dick Grayson Batman story in a very positive way, and it's good to see Damian getting his time, Tim getting his time as well. I think it, much like all these other Blackest Night tie-ins, this story does kind of stand on its own in a very positive way because I think the inclusion of Deadman, and it really evokes a time for me in the from the 70s and late 60s when the Batman Deadman stories were very important to the Batman canon.
Yeah,
and I mean,
great Neil Adams.
Exactly. Yeah. Denny O'Neill, Frank Robbins, and Neil Adams doing these marvelous stories. And I think Pete has kind of captured the magic of that. And as an older reader, it's nice to see Boston Brand, who usually has all the answers, really kind of freaked out about, wait, what the hell's going on? Where's Bruce? And oh my God, and Dick, what are you doing in the outfit and everything? And I think
I can add a point about Pete. I've known Pete like for forever. He's an old friend. I taught him everything he knows. Actually, I've known him since the first day he worked at DC.
Okay.
Yeah, I've known him that long.
Wow.
I was a famous artist at the time.
He drew.
It's before I get forgotten. Before. It's before the time where only my grandma, who passed away, remembered me. It's like, my mom is still alive, thank God. So I got someone.
Someone who remembers.
Pete has been like always respectful of like Silver Age. I remember like back in the old days, like I was talking with him, like sitting in the office, like whatever. And I should also add that he saved my ass like more than once at DC. Let's be clear. Anyway. Pete was always saying back in the day, like, well, if I want to edit Green Lantern, read Green Lantern, I want the Green Lantern I grew up with. Same thing with The Flash, same thing with everything. And Pete's friendship with Geoff Johns goes also way back, like when Pete was his editor. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that many times. They would literally like speak 3 hours on the phone, like from like say 6 p.m. to like 9 p.m., like when everybody else was gone from the office, and they would together like plot out what would happen at the time. Like Geoff was working on like whatever JSA or like, and they would plot out together, and they both agreed. They both had like the same like affinities about like what they like about comics. And what I was saying like last week about Geoff Johns taking like the best of the Silver Age is true from to Pete. Pete has been in the shadow always, like just like also helping Geoff like shape that stuff. And Pete now comes forth with like a GLC and like Blackest Night Batman and like mm-hmm. whatever he's been doing. And it's wonderful every time.
I agree.
And remember when he called me one time, like that was a little while back. He told me he's going to quit DC as an editor. He's going to be a writer. I was like, oh shit, I'm in trouble. Like, who's going to help me as an editor? No, you got to stay here. Come on, man. I'll pay you. You know, like, whatever. And, plus, he wanted to be closer to his son and all that, spend more time at home. And like,
he has a great writing touch. He has a really, like...
And I was like, mm-hmm. I remember reading online at first, like, oh, Pete Thomas is going on an ego trip or like whatever. I swear to you.
No, he's
that
good. No. Yeah.
And
no.
Sure, I mean, I'm talking like 2 months later, it was like, oh, Pete is great. And now he's like recognized, just like people forget he was ever an editor.
Absolutely.
He's just like one of these guys, like they love him. They want more from him.
He's got like such a good touch with dialogue. He's and like, just
yes.
like, yeah.
I'm telling you, Pete and Geoff are like in some ways like two faces of the same coin.
Yeah. Sure.
And they work well together. They did before. And they do nowadays.
I don't know. There's a little bit of dirt on Tomasi's style that I like. There's a little bit rougher edge
to it.
Well,
you know what his favorite movies are. Pete Tomasi is like, well, first he's a movie buff. Like you wouldn't mm-hmm. believe he's a screenwriter, like a playwright, like what have you. It's like you would walk into his office, you had like Bullet.
Oh, great.
Poster. Oh, nice.
You had, like,
yeah.
That's where it comes from. Dirty Dozen, like, yeah, you name it. Like, the
he's a Lee Marvin fan. Like,
it's a little dirtiness to Pete Tomasi stuff.
And you had mentioned The Mighty, and that is a book that I don't know what the sales on The Mighty are like right
it
now.
It would make a great movie. I'm thinking about that.
It's going to be one of those series that 5 and 10 and 15 years from now, hopefully, you know, other podcasts.
It's going to be like the Light Brigade.
It's going to be one. It's like, holy shit, there was this series that came out in 2009, 2010, and holy shit, was this good. Do you remember this? No.
Yeah.
Is it available?
And the original artist, like the original artist, Peter Snijberg.
Yeah.
Is one of my favorite, and that's
awesome. He did the White Brigade with Tomasi.
That's it.
Yeah.
He has been one of Pete's favorite for many years. We used
he's
to speak
fantastic.
About it like at length on the phone.
Well, he
how
you know,
good that guy is.
Going back to our conversation about Archie Goodwin, Pete Snijberg is the guy that took over for Tony Harris on Starman. Whenever Archie
that's
Goodwin
right.
was editing
yes.
that
and
series,
and actually, and no disrespect to Tony Harris, I prefer him. I prefer mm-hmm. Snijberg to Harris. And now that guy, Samny, I saw him like about like 2-3 months ago. I was like, wait a minute, it's different. Different artist. Awesome. It's unbelievable. Yeah. He gets it. He just gets it. It's wonderful. It's like how should I put it? The new coming of like...
The thing with Samny to every time I've seen Somni do something, like I saw him draw something for Ron Richards at the Windy City Comic Con, which
was
the
Cyclops.
Like it's this rough, it's like a rough, it's like a amazing woodcut die. Like it's this like rough edge, like sort of thing, and it's like blocky but really great, and it's really like explosive. And on his Twitter page, he has a flash sketch as his background, which looks amazing. Like everything Chris does, the Cyclops he drew for Ron was absolutely it was incredible. But the Mighty's going to be one of those things. It's like Pete Tomasi. I've loved what Pete's written so far, and I think he's like done an incredible job. And you've seen. He does. He's like the slightly grittier version of Jeff Johns, but he's been doing.
That's
outside,
exactly what I was trying to say.
The Outsiders. Yeah. I mean, he's done like a little grittier, a little dirtier
his
version
Outsiders,
of Jeff Johns.
His Outsiders was great. I mean, that's the thing, and I know Dan's taking it over now. Dan will be taking over the Outsiders very soon. But I don't know. This is for months we've had this discussion. You've said, you know, Marvel really seems like they've been like, you know, cultivating the younger writers and stuff.
Yes.
And I think conversely, DC, and especially in the case of Peter and stuff, has benefited
Sterling
from getting
Gates,
a guy.
Peter DeMoss,
Now Sterling's a young gun that they've kind of cultivated, but Pete is a guy who, as Christian said, stepped down from editorial and is you know, really this great writer who I look forward to in every mainstream project he does.
I knew that before he left, actually. It's funny because, like, he wrote like his first story like for DC shortly after he joined, like that must have been like 95 in Showcase. It was a Mongol story actually.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Yeah. And I drew the cover for that issue, and he approached me at the time. He's like, "Can I buy the cover for you?" I'm like, "No, I'll give it to you."
Oh, and that's so really cool.
He just drew the comic. He just wrote the his first comic. I believe that was his first comic. I don't know at the time, like he was also writing like screenplays and like different things. He sold one like now to Hollywood, like not so long ago.
Oh, that's cool.
What's the story about like the crazy house, the Winchester widow like built? You know, like you've heard about that house, the crazy house that never ends.
And Winchester
widow.
Yes,
Winchester widow.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Like he wrote a horror movie screenplay that he sold to Hollywood.
She built a room every year because she thought whenever she stopped, she'd die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He sold a screenplay last year or two years ago, like to Hollywood about that, like, and he's been like, I don't want to get into too much details. I don't know how much he would be comfortable with, but anyway, Pete has always had like a full knowledge, both movies, comics, and all that. He's always brought that to the fore as an editor, but always staying back. Yet I know for a fact that he was behind of most of the decisions that were made, and I'm talking very intricate decisions here in the comics he was editing, and that was for the best many times. And now it's just brilliant. I see him like you know, writing and being recognized like so quickly for it, without like with all the cynicism like going down like very quickly and all that. And it's like, wow, this guy is great. Like, let's go for it. And that's
He writes a great Green Lantern Corps, which is a hard book to do because there's a ton of characters.
A lot of characters.
I know. Like I get like also like background like echoes like from Doug and Pat, obviously, like work together. Actually, there's like the Green Lantern studio somewhere in Minnesota.
The way the Green Lanterns look is it's based solely in Minnesota. That's how.
Yeah, the center of the universe somewhere in Minnesota.
Yeah. Ola is in Minnesota.
Yeah, it's just like unbelievable.
Really. What time will we better all begin? Get on, star needs to be done. It's winding down, there's much you miss. Working on that graveyard shift. But I'm not saying this won't go wrong. As day comes along, what I see is true. I can learn to believe. Can't believe. Powers that be.
When are you going to get Pete Tomasi?
I talked to Pete about that in Baltimore. Hey, man, honestly, I didn't do a lot of interviews at Baltimore because I just, you know, a lot of other podcasts are doing the quick hits and stuff, and I would rather say hi to everybody and set up a future thing. And no, Pete and I talked about it. No, we're going to do it. It's going to happen.
I want in-depth John Sundress Charlie Rose style interviews.
No, I want. I appreciate that, but no, honestly, I said this to Pete, and he's going to go for it.
That would be a great interview.
It'll
great
happen.
Interview.
Oh no, it'll happen.
So, all right, let's.
It'll Charlie Rose style right, interview. It's going to be all great. Right, it's going to be Chris Nesem and behind on a black background is like well, Pete.
At the coffee table, at the round table, man.
You look very handsome today.
Yeah, see, that's the image that.
What's
you had
it like being Pete Tomasi every day, waking up and seeing Pete Tomasi saying, "I'm gonna write Green."
Well, I spent many years talking to Christian Lamy. He was coming begging in the office. That fucking French bastard. Kill him.
There you go. We could do that. All right, fine. I'm going to call
I
Christian.
Made him.
All right, so if I don't talk to Pete, I'll talk to Christian, and he'll
I
do
made
the.
Pete, he doesn't know it.
There you go.
Okay, all right.
Don't tell him either.
Want to thank everyone for being here. Mr. John Suntress.
Thank you.
Mr. Christian Alme.
Thank
Mr.
You, Chris.
Tom Caters. All of the people in the Peanut Gallery. Gobo, all the way from Canada. Kyle Bice, who sat in for a second while Christian was going to the bathroom. Thank you, Kyle.
And yet he did not even speak French as I had instructed him.
Yes.
You can check out Tom 3 times a week as he runs you through the history
twice.
Of the
twice a week.
Is it twice?
You can feels check like
out
three.
Tom, you can check out Tom twice a week as he runs you through the you history of the DC universe with Tom versus the Flash. You can also listen to me if you are a glutton for more Chris Niesman punishment on 11 o'clock comics with my buddies Mr.
Yes.
Jason Wood, Mr. Vince B, and
right.
Mr. David Wu or Adam. Mr. David Price.
I didn't
sorry, David.
Marvel.
All right. We will be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
Oh my God!
Christian's whipping it out at the end of the show. Holy shit!
The Bible is a bottle.
Man, what a finish!
When morning comes twice a day or not at all, if I break into, will you put me back together? When this puzzle's figured out, will you still be around to say you've just been there, walking the line upside down?
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.